Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, I'm going to begin this program with a special in-depth original investigative report. I am concerned that our U.S. Public Health Service, including the National Cancer Institute, the National Institute of on Aging, the FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, these are all under the umbrella of the U.S. Public Health Service, that they are walking in alignment with the special interest groups, the pharmaceutical companies, and therefore the lobbyists for these companies, in effect, control what you and I know as far as the health choices we're supposed to make. With those health choices, we are told that vaccines are both safe and effective. It is accepted without question by the pharmacists, the nurses, the physicians, and the legislators, and unfortunately, almost all of the mainstream media, and historically by the average American. And then it happens. The child is injured, and you can understand why. The child was developing normally, and then received one or more shots, and then you start to see changes. Another round of shots, more changes. And yet, with your questions to the physician, you were told that this is normal, but it's never the vaccine. We have been in complete denial of this. Is it possible that more than a million parents have seen the adverse effects of vaccines on their children? I'm not even discussing adults now, or senior citizens, or pregnant women. Just those parents with injured children. As a nation, we live in collective denialism. Hence the significance of this report. I'm only focusing upon one vaccine, but it is one of the most lethal and problematic vaccines. It's the human papilloma vaccine. The title of this report is Unnecessary and Lethal, by myself and Richard Gale. It is posted today on our websites, GaryNull.com, ProgressiveRadarNetwork.com, and my Facebook. It is fully referenced. Every parent desires only the best for their children, which is why most parents insist that their children, primarily girls, but now also including some boys, receive the three-shot series of human papilloma vaccines. Parents do this because there is the unchallenged assumptions that vaccine public mandates and physician recommendations are founded upon sound scientific and medical principles of safety and efficacy. This is not only true for the human papillomavirus vaccines, Merck's Gardasil and Glaxo's Cervarix, but for all childhood vaccines. Unfortunately, there have been very little effective popular opposition to the vaccination regimes, except by those parents who have witnessed these vaccines' devastation upon their children's developing brains and immune systems. The rate of autism in the United States has now risen to 1 in 68. Yet at the same time, parents are repeatedly told it is not the vaccine. The industrial food industry repeatedly tells us that it's not the GMOs and toxic pesticides such as glyphosate, and the fossil fuel multinationals repeatedly tell us it's not the heavy metals spewing into the atmosphere from their plants. Rather, we are consistently told that the medical profession does not harm children. Vaccines save lives, we're told. Fortunately, more and more people are awakening to these lies. Although there is a growing number of parents fighting the medical establishment, in some cases even winning, they nevertheless have to live with an injured child or teenager, frequently for the remainder of that child's life. The very, very federal agencies that support an ever-increasing vaccination schedule, the CDC, Health and Human Services, FDA, the Surgeon General, and the entire private medical establishment and physicians are complicit in a mutual denial that vaccine scientific review and regulation require a vast systemic overhaul before any vaccine should be pronounced safe and effective before entering the market. When we investigate two of the most recent vaccines rationally and objectively, Gardasil and Cervarix, what is discovered should shake the pro-vaccine paradigm to its very foundations. What we find is a trail of permanent injury, neurological disorders, and death. And behind that, we discover political and private obfuscation, cover-ups, lies, distortions, and never an apology from either government or pharmaceutical industry representatives. There is no desire by any government agency, corporation, or leading medical institution to seek and share the truth. This article provides but a glimpse into how sordid and perverse the entire vaccination system has become by using the human papilloma vaccine as just one example. Relying upon data from the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, the vaccine watch organization SaneVax determined that since Gardasil's launch in 2006 until November 2012, the human papillomavirus vaccine was linked to 121 deaths, 27,485 medical injuries of young girls, some as young as 11 years of age. At the end of last year, by upgrading the numbers, it's now over 32,000 serious injuries, over 150 deaths. Unfortunately, only a fraction of vaccine adverse events reported by pediatricians, physicians, and medical clinics and hospitals ever make their way into a database. Hence, the number of actual injured could be vastly more, and deaths as well. Few parents even know such a reporting system exists. Gardasil, the human papillomavirus vaccine produced by Merck, was brought to market with great fanfare, widely proclaimed as the first ever anti-cancer vaccine. Merck created a market for Gardasil out of thin air with deceptive and dishonest advertising, and thereby planted fear in the minds of consumers. Fear of an enormous yet unknown health crisis, an invisible time bomb waiting to explode and harm women everywhere. Whereas most vaccines and drugs undergo several years of clinical testing, including human trials, prior to FDA approval, Gardasil was on an FDA fast-track approval and underwent a mere 6 months of trial research. When criticized for their aggressive marketing, Merck countered that they were performing a public service by raising awareness about the human papillomavirus and weren't selling anything. So they said. This lie became public as Merck was caught lobbying the 50 states for mandatory Gardasil vaccination before it had even been secured through FDA approval. The fact is that there was never a need for Gardasil in the first place. Regular pap testing had already lowered the incidence of cervical cancer by 80% in the United States to a few thousand cases a year, and the vast majority of all human papilloma infections resolved themselves on their own, with no medical intervention. But by lining the bank accounts of such groups as Women in Government, and of course the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, Merck was able to influence legislation such that almost immediately after the vaccine was approved, it was part of the vaccine schedule recommended for all girls. If it hadn't been for Governor Rick Perry's blunder of trying to mandate Gardasil for school attendance in Texas in the face of a huge conflict of interest and a $50 million contribution to his presidential campaign, Gardasil might have gone even further. There's something deeply wrong with a giant pharmaceutical company spending hundreds of millions of dollars to manipulate women and influence legislation in order to generate a revenue stream of billions of dollars a year for themselves at the expense of a gullible public. What is wrong with Gardasil isn't just that it's unnecessary. Gardasil is possibly the most dangerous vaccine on the market, with the potential to injure, maim, and even kill the children who receive it. The program of coercion to vaccinate every 11 to 26-year-old girl with Gardasil is relentless. This vaccine is given not just in the doctor's offices, where doctors have been known to, in effect, reprimand non-compliant patients, but in schools and colleges, where the pressure on girls and their parents to conform can be extreme. These institutions all have quotas, sometimes including financial rewards, and they are anxious to prove high rates of compliance. but there is no informed consent prior to vaccination. So most of these girls and their parents have no idea what they're risking by agreeing to vaccination with Gardasil. And while Merck, the FDA, and the CDC, and the medical establishment all deny that there have any serious life-altering adverse events associated with Gardasil, the fact is that compared with the mandated vaccines, which are given with greater frequency, Gardasil still has the most adverse events reported to the government's own agency, and that's compared to any vaccine. And since reporting of adverse events is not mandatory in the United States, although outbreaks of so-called vaccine-preventable illnesses are, it is likely that only 2 to 10% of adverse events are ever reported. But what of the victims of Merck's war on cervical cancer? Alexis Wolf was a normal seventh grader in 2007. She had type 1 diabetes, but had successfully learned how to give herself insulin shots and eventually graduated to an insulin pump, which she had easily mastered. Alexis made the honor roll for the first time that year and was rewarded with a trip to Germany over the summer to visit her grandparents. Her endocrinologist believed that the diabetes was under control and felt that she would be perfectly capable of making the trip on her own and managing her diabetes herself. And to make sure everything was in order prior to travel, the doctor recommended that she receive her first Gardasil vaccine. The trip went well, but she seemed different to her mother when she returned, perhaps a bit distant. She received her second Gardasil vaccine after coming home, and shortly thereafter her personality changed entirely. For a relatively shy girl, immediately she became very gregarious, hugging everyone all the time. But she also became agitated and troubled and started having difficulty keeping food down. It reached the point where she threw up a number of times a day, which is especially dangerous for a diabetic. There began a series of appointments with many doctors, general practitioners, endocrinologists, cardiologists, gastroenterologists, and numerous diagnostic tests. But nothing they did or recommended helped. She was struggling to get through her days, usually carrying a bucket with her at all times just in case she vomited. She had terrible insomnia, was eating excessively, and was falling further and further behind in school. In January 2008, she received her third Gardasil shot. Within 2 weeks, she was in the hospital. Her behavior had worsened to the point where she was considered bipolar and was put on a series of antipsychotic medications. Her mother didn't believe that this was a psychological problem. She knew that something else had to be wrong. Knew that there had to be some medical explanation for what was going on. After weeks and months in and out of different hospitals, with no improvement in her condition growing more desperate, at long last she was seen by a doctor who recognized that she was having seizures, something all the previous doctors had overlooked. This led to more tests, EEGs, MRIs, and spinal taps, and finally a conclusion that seemed to make sense: encephalitis, traumatic brain injury, and seizure disorder. But why? Her mother had an additional conclusion which was so crystal clear in hindsight. Her daughter was normal before she received the Gardasil vaccine and had worsened with each one. The Gardasil vaccine had left her daughter with brain damage. I spoke with Tracy Wolf, her mother, about their ordeal. While maintaining a cheerful optimism, Tracy admitted that she could never have foreseen how their lives would change completely. After her daughter's seizure disorder was identified and she was put on anti-seizure medication, her physical symptoms improved to a certain extent, but she was completely altered. She had deteriorated from being a normal child to one who is only functioning at a fourth grade level. Forced to enter special education instead of rejoining her previous class, she became enormously frustrated, and school became an ordeal for everyone. She has turned 18 now, and Tracy finally gave up and pulled her out of school, realizing that it would really not offer her daughter anything but misery. The stress on their family has been enormous. The pressure caused the Wolf's marriage to dissolve, and Tracy's now raising both their daughters by herself, with her father living in a different state. The daughter needs almost constant supervision, and Tracy can only leave her alone for very short periods of time. They've applied for special services that could possibly be helpful, but the waiting list is long. The daughter doesn't understand why things are so different, why her little sister is learning to drive, but she can't. Unlike with other types of injuries, a vaccine victim cannot simply sue the company responsible for the problem. Since 1986, all cases of vaccine injury must be brought to the Office of Special Master at the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, commonly known as the Vaccine Court. Now, this court was established to create a non-adversarial situation in which children's injury would be examined by an independent group of thinkers. This was, in effect, vaccine compensation injury. But the Department of Health and Human Services has completely distorted the intent of this legislation and turned it into a highly adversarial proceeding. Injuries listed on a table are supposed to be automatically compensated, but they have removed a lot of injuries from the table over the years and have listed new vaccines, such as Gardasil, with no specific injuries attributable to the vaccine. So the burden is on the victim to prove causation because there is no presumption of any injury. In conversations with William Ronan, a lawyer retained by Alexis' family, he shared that his law firm currently is handling 15 Gardasil cases that are being evaluated and another 6 cases already filed in the vaccine court. Interestingly, out of all the types of Gardasil-related injuries, the cases Ronan represents all fall into 2 main categories, autoimmune and neurological. When the injuries are neurological, doctors frequently can't put their finger on what is wrong and end up sending the girl to a psychiatrist. Ronan maintains that it is impossible for all these girls suddenly to have developed mental problems or simply to be imagining that they have been harmed since receiving the Gardasil vaccine. While not anti-vaccine himself, he has seen too many girls have serious adverse reactions to Gardasil. He runs a 2-person law firm in Kansas City and, without advertising, has received at least 30 calls regarding Gardasil injuries. He believes, based upon his experience, that this is just the tip of the iceberg. Anyone actually advertising legal services for Gardasil victims will be inundated with a huge number of cases. The work is slow going. Evidence of harm caused by vaccines is crucial, but there aren't a lot of published medical studies about safety to back them up. Those that exist are funded, you guessed it, by the manufacturer of the vaccine, and they tend to be overly favorable. Possibly the strongest argument against Merck, according to Ronan, is their failure to warn girls of the risk involved when getting the Gardasil vaccine. Merck clearly knew that this drug could cause neurological dysfunction, yet it did not adequately address this in the product insert. Also, it is well known that girls who already have the human papillomavirus infection are more likely to be harmed by the vaccine, but manufacturers do not make this clear, and hence, they don't recommend testing. Ronan summed up his view of vaccinating young girls with Gardasil, quote, "The real issue is, what is the benefit of this vaccine? Do the benefits outweigh the risks? There is a risk of a seizure disorder or an autoimmune disorder versus the benefits that it might reduce cervical cancer. But Gardasil doesn't eliminate the need for regular pap testing, which is already safe and there isn't good evidence that it prevents cervical cancer. In evaluating risk and benefit, when all the facts are known, it becomes a pretty easy decision. The vaccine is more dangerous than any benefit. Unfortunately, medical professionals tend to read and listen to information provided by the manufacturers, which doesn't adequately present the risks involved, so they actually aren't sufficiently informed to advise their patients," end quote. Ronan's own daughter had to fight off an aggressive attempt by her doctor to get the Gardasil vaccine, so he understands the pressure that girls are under to just go along instead of asking questions. I interviewed Dr. Merrill Nass, board-certified internal medicine practitioner and vaccine specialist, who agrees that Gardasil was rushed to market without adequate safety testing. 3 years after approval for girls, the company likewise received approval to vaccinate boys age 9 and above, with no new studies and very little data to justify this action. Regarding Gardasil's adverse effects, Dr. Nass said, quote, "Children don't usually die suddenly when they are healthy, but there are certainly lots of teenagers, especially girls, who have died relatively suddenly after Gardasil or developed severe neurological reactions. Therefore, if you're going to try to balance safety and efficacy when you prescribe something like a vaccine, you have to know how effective it's going to be. Does this really prevent cervical cancer in young women? And does it prevent it in women who've already been exposed to these viruses? So, I don't know how other doctors prescribe something like Gardasil. Basically, they make an assumption that since the FDA has licensed it, the manufacturer would only market something that's safe. Doctors go ahead and prescribe. And what they may not be aware of is that it's extremely hard to link side effects to a vaccine for many reasons. Getting a judgment against a manufacturer is very difficult and has become more difficult due to some recent litigation that reduced manufacturers' liability for vaccines in general," end quote. Gardasil's doctrine is already so entrenched after only 6 years that it's a formidable task to challenge the official story that this vaccine is safe and effective, because the truth is so unsettling. The remarkable claims of Gardasil's benefits to women in the war on cancer are full of holes and not supported by good science, even that science funded by Merck itself. It's important to deconstruct the falsehoods and half-truths that masquerade as facts about Gardasil. And that's what we will do now. There is no human papillomavirus health crisis. Cervical cancer in the United States has been at low records for the past 2 decades. Currently, an estimated 3,600 women die of cervical cancer each year. That is a tragedy for those women and their families. The spectacular success in lowering the death rates from cervical cancer can be attributed to the annual Pap screening. Between 1955 and 1992, deaths from cervical cancer declined 74% and continued to decline every year by 4%. Part of the success of Pap screening lies in the fact that cervical cancer, unlike most other cancers, is very slow growing. With screening, there's ample opportunity to catch and successfully treat cervical cancer before it gets out of hand. It would be unlikely, then, for any further treatment to improve upon this already very low rate of cervical cancer death. When government officials and vaccine advertising make wild claims of high death rates associated with cervical cancer, according to a neuroscientist, Dr. Lucia Tomjanovic at the University of British Columbia, 88% of these deaths occur in developing countries, not in the United States, not in Canada, not in England. No, in other countries, third world countries, where they do not have adequate Pap smear screening programs. But they don't tell you that. The human papillomavirus infection does not usually lead to cancer. It is estimated that virtually all women, let me repeat this, all women in the United States experience a series of human papillomavirus infections throughout their lifetimes. What the makers of Gardasil try to hide is the well-documented fact that 90% of all human papillomavirus infections go away of their own accord within 2 years without causing any disease and with no treatment or intervention of any kind. Gardasil does not prevent cancer. The endpoint of all the efficacy studies for Gardasil was not, in fact, prevention of cancer. Researchers couldn't actually assess the development of cervical cancer following the vaccine because this process normally takes up to 40 years on the far end, 20 years on the low end, and their study stopped at just 5. So instead, Merck scientists decided that the presence of atypical cervical cells was a valid, quote, surrogate endpoint, end quote, or substitute for cancer. They use this hypothesis despite the fact that there is no evidence that these types of cervical lesions they chose as their endpoint would eventually lead to cancer. Merck has never acknowledged that their entire premise for the efficacy of Gardasil rests on pure speculation. In fact, many, if not most, of atypical cervical cells resolve on their own without intervention. Gardasil is not 98% effective at preventing high-grade cervical lesions. Results of Merck's efficacy study, published in 2007 in the New England Journal of Medicine, claimed that Gardasil is 98% effective at preventing high-grade cervical lesions. Subsequently, Merck and the CDC had lowered that figure to 70%. But the article itself reveals that Merck manipulated the data by excluding women and girls who did not follow the exact protocol. When all women in the study were considered, vaccine efficacy dropped to 44%. But even these numbers are only reflecting cervical lesions associated with human papillomavirus 16 and 18. When Merck looked at Gardasil's ability to prevent all cervical lesions, Gardasil was only 17% effective. And again, their definition of effective rests solely on the unfounded assumption that certain types of cervical lesions turn into cancer. More damning is Merck's own acknowledgement that in their controlled studies, a percentage of girls actually developed serious cervical lesions following the Gardasil vaccine. The vaccine seemed to cause the most lesions in girls with pre-existing human papillomavirus 16 or 18 infections. Also, in girls who had no pre-existing human papillomavirus infections. At the very least, screening girls for human papillomavirus 16 or 18 infections would give human papillomavirus positive girls the chance to avoid developing cervical lesions by declining the vaccine. Yet, not only does Merck not recommend testing for human papillomavirus prior to vaccination with Gardasil, they actually discourage the practice, presumably so as not to draw attention to the danger of their vaccine. Anything to maintain the fantasy that this is a safe and effective vaccine. Gardasil does not prevent human papillomavirus. Gardasil is designed to prevent only four human papillomavirus strains, 16 and 18, which can cause cervical cancer, and 6 and 11, which can cause genital warts. However, there are 150 other types of human papillomavirus, at least 15 of which can cause cervical cancer. And Gardasil provides zero protection against these other strains. Does Merck's so-called consumer education ever mention any of this? Of course not. Why would you have your daughter vaccinated if you knew the protection was so limited? Vaccinating prepubescent girls with Gardasil will not protect them against human papillomavirus or cervical cancer. Despite the sanctimonious advertising, which suggests that both mothers and daughters can empower themselves through Gardasil, Merck's own studies show that the vaccine is only effective for 5 years. So if your daughter is 11 and gets the Gardasil vaccine, it will have stopped working completely by the age of 16. But since Merck doesn't give out this information voluntarily, these girls and their mothers will be in the dark. Gardasil vaccination does not eliminate the need for annual Pap screening. In portraying Gardasil as a treatment that will prevent 90% of cervical cancer, the strong implication is that vaccinated girls will no longer be at risk of cervical cancer at all. As we have already seen in Finland, this can lead to the false assumption that there is no longer a need for annual Pap testing. When women in Finland stopped getting Pap screened, cervical cancer increased 4 times the incidence in only 5 years. This complacency about risk started and fostered by Gardasil advertising is also likely to lead to an actual increase in cervical cancer in the United States as more females receive the vaccine and stop taking the Pap smear. There is no evidence that Gardasil is effective in boys at preventing genital warts and anal cancer. Merck's study of human papillomavirus vaccine efficacy in males, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, states that Gardasil is, quote, 89% effective against genital warts and 75% effective against anal cancer. Given the fact that there are approximately 300 annual deaths from anal rectal cancer among men in the United States, one wonders how Merck was able to prove such a huge reduction in such a rare problem. As with the female group, external lesions substituted for actual cancer with no proof that lesions of that type actually lead to cancer at all. Yet Merck's statistics regarding their cancer substitute penile and the endothelial neoplasm listed in their appendix to the article show that in men who did not have human papillomavirus prior to vaccination, both the vaccinated group and the placebo group had the same number of these types of lesions, making the observed efficacy of Gardasil minus 98%. And for human papilloma strain 18 related genital lesions, there were actually more lesions in the vaccinated group than in the placebo group. So as the previous study, Merck's impressive numbers for the efficacy of Gardasil in men can only be attained by excluding one quarter of the study participants. When everyone in is concluded and all outcomes are assessed, the efficacy drops to zero. You heard me correctly, zero. Also, Gardasil is not safe. Most significantly, Gardasil has been associated with an unacceptable number of serious, life-altering adverse events following vaccination. According to World Health Organization data, the rate of serious adverse reactions reported to the government's own vaccine adverse reporting system is 2.5 times, that's 250% higher, than the current age standardized death rate for cervical cancer. According to an evaluation performed by SameVax, of the 75 FDA-approved vaccines, the human papillomavirus vaccines account for 60% of the entire adverse events reporting to the federal government. This includes 64% of all reported deaths, 65% of life-threatening reactions, an additional 82% of all cases of permanent disability for women under 30 years of age is attributed to the human papillomavirus vaccines. Adverse reactions, seizures, anaphylaxis, paralysis, transverse myelitis, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, and all forms of tic movements of the eyes, back and forth jerking movements of the extremities, brachial neuritis, loss of vision, tachycardia syndrome, facial palsy, deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, chronic fatigue syndrome, blindness, pancreatitis, speech problems, short-term memory loss, miscarriage, multiple sclerosis, autoimmune disorders, and that is what we're not hearing about. Yes, you heard me correctly. The vaccine reporting agency of the federal government found 62 cases of cervical cancer following vaccination with Gardasil. Also, while Merck has not made pregnancy a contraindication for Gardasil vaccine, recent data released through the government's own agency revealed that Gardasil is by far the most dangerous vaccine to receive while pregnant, having caused a reported 26,000 adverse reactions in its six-year existence compared to the next most dangerous vaccine, which caused 200 adverse reactions over the past 20 years. Gardasil vaccination while pregnant has also been associated both with frequent miscarriage and a high rate of birth defects. But most tragically, as of August 2012, the total deaths due to this was 118. Now, the newest one, we just got 150. There is biological evidence that Gardasil is associated with autoimmune disorders and death. Cindy Bevington has investigated and reported about Gardasil extensively. A multi-award-winning reporter, she was on the Progressive Radio Network. She remarked about the hundreds of emails she received from girls, mothers, and doctors around the U.S. about the misgivings about the human papillomavirus vaccines. Often she received requests from parents asking her to look into the case. Well, her research has shown, by the CDC's own admission, only 10% maximum of adverse events get listed in the government registries. Even this very conservative figure has been refuted by independent analysis. Actual records show as low as 1% of actual negative reactions for any given vaccine. It is therefore realistic to suspect that Gardasil could be associated with anywhere from hundreds of thousands to millions of adverse effects among vaccinated American women. And starting in mid-2011, discoveries about hidden Gardasil ingredients and the biological mechanisms contributing to the high rate of adverse events went public. First, blood samples from a 13-year-old girl who developed acute juvenile rheumatoid arthritis within 24 hours after receiving a Gardasil injection was analyzed. In fact, the DNA from a human papillomavirus infection will reside in the bloodstream for only a very short period of time. What was so alarming in this case is that the girl's blood was drawn 2 years after vaccination. 2 years, not a few days. The head researcher, Dr. Sin-Hang Lee, in Connecticut, discovered the presence of the human papillomavirus DNA. However, what was more startling is that this was no ordinary DNA from a wild or clinical human papillomavirus strain. Instead, this was genetically engineered human papillomavirus DNA. That was designed to firmly attach to the vaccine's aluminum adjuvant, contrary to Merck's own package insert stating, quote, no viral DNA in the vaccine, end quote, which Merck promptly removed after Dr. Lee went public with his findings. According to Dr. Lee, quote, based on medical literature and some of the FDA Merck-owned publications, coming from an outside source, DNA in an injectable protein-based vaccine may increase the risk of autoimmune disorders and gene mutations, which may lead to malignancies, end quote. In short, boys and girls receiving Gardasil are being injected with a biohazardous weapon. The controversy over the safety of Gardasil took a major turn in 2012 when parents of two unrelated teenage girls who believe their daughters died from the human papillomavirus vaccine had the coroner send brain tissue samples to doctors Chris Shaw and Dr. Tom Genovic at the University of British Columbia's Neurodynamics Research Group for investigation. Neither of the girls had a history of previous medical conditions or drug use. One was 14, a Caucasian, and the other was 15, a New Zealand and Maori descent. The only thing held in common was that both had received Gardasil. Prior to autopsy, analysis showed no signs of brain inflammation that could contribute to their sudden neurological death. The University of British Columbia's findings, published in the Journal of Pharmaceutical Regulatory Affairs, were shocking. In all the brain tissue specimens provided to the researchers, it was discovered that the vaccine's human papillomavirus 16-L1 antigen from the human papillomavirus had penetrated the blood-brain barrier of the teenagers, thereby triggering an autoimmune reaction that affected the brain's cerebral vasculature and led to brain blood vessel hemorrhaging. In other words, the antigens contained in the vaccine crossed over into the blood of the brain tissue, signaling the immune system to actually target the brain's blood vessels for destruction. These two cases of autoimmune vasculitis offer clear neurobiological evidence to explain why there have been so many deaths and permanent neurological disabilities, incidences of seizures and loss of consciousness, and encephalopathy due to Gardasil. After discovering a biological association between the human papillomavirus antigen in the vaccine and the encephalopathic conditions that most likely caused the girl's sudden death, the doctors wrote to British medical authorities about the findings. The letter response she received back was appalling. It stated that the health officials in the UK had already made up their minds about the human papillomavirus vaccine safety and no research could be provided that would cause them to reconsider their views. Dr. Suzanne Garland at the Royal Women's Hospital in Melbourne published a study in Obstetrics and Gynecology showing, quote, higher rate of congenital abnormalities in infants were noted in pregnant women who received the vaccine, end quote. A second study, according to Dr. Christina England, found slightly higher fetal deaths and rare cases of central nervous system malformations and neural tube defects in vaccinated pregnant women. Such studies confirm the seriously flawed nature of the clinical trials conducted by Merck on Gardasil. They also speak to the dangerous conflicts of interest present in the FDA's approval process, in which the agency receives millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical cartel to expedite vaccine and drug launches, despite having limited data on their efficacy and safety. In conclusion, from the start, a vaccine against the human papillomavirus was completely unnecessary. Aside from the unreasonable health risks that come with this vaccine, Gardasil is also the most expensive recommended vaccine on the market at $120 to $150 per injection for three required doses. If this vaccine becomes mandated for school attendance, how are underprivileged people and the uninsured to come up with the money? And as funding for government programs dries up, does this make any sense to allocate state health dollars to vaccinate Medicaid-eligible girls with Gardasil instead of using the money something might actually benefit them? And since one arm of the government, the FDA, already approved Gardasil in 2007 for inclusion in Vaccination for Children program, which provides free immunizations to about 45% of children in the United States due to their low-income status, Merck's siphoning off money from other health priorities is poised to become a reality. Vaccination of every 11 and 12-year-old girl in the United States with three doses of Gardasil would cost $1.5 billion. To vaccinate these girls for a lifetime, once word gets out that the vaccine is only effective at 5 years, $7.7 billion. Will there be any money left over for anything else, like pap screening for poor women? Does this really seem like a good use of limited resources? In the United States and the United Kingdom, the health agencies are ruled and dictated by the drug markets. You have Merck, Pfizer, and a handful of other pharmaceutical firms that control policy at the CDC and the FDA. If you wish to find more accurate official views and policies regarding the human papillomavirus vaccines, we must look at other nations that care more about their public health of their populations rather than the revenues of private corporations. Today, there's a growing concern among many nations' health ministries and physicians about the serious health risks associated with these vaccines. Even an extremely pro-medical technology country, such as Israel, is becoming alarmed at the rising number of human papillomavirus vaccine injuries in teenage girls. Israel's reviewing the evidence for cessation of the human papillomavirus vaccination. India banned the human papillomavirus vaccine due to vaccine-related deaths. France no longer permits advertising for Gardasil or Cervarix. A landmark ruling in Japan was reached in April, just recently, of this year, with the government no longer recommending the human papillomavirus vaccine program. The press conferences and debates were even televised. Rather than being mandated, the choice to vaccinate or not as strictly to the individual as vaccines should be. So why hasn't the FDA and the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics, or Merck itself, responded to the adverse reports at the federal government level that Gardasil is not a safe vaccine? The argument, which is the same defense used by all the drug companies and government agencies against any adverse reaction to any vaccine, is that since the government has this system, it uses voluntarily passive reporting, it does not prove that a sudden death or a sudden incident occurred after vaccine was in fact caused by the vaccine. The only causal relationship acceptable to the powers to be are those that result from scientific studies. But these are often unacceptable to the rest of us, since the majority of these studies are funded by the pharmaceutical companies themselves. So the fix is in. We have been gamed. We have been manipulated. What can any injured child or concerned parent do in the face of this hard line? Should they be required to set up their own scientific study? Obviously, neither Merck nor our government are willing to spend money to prove that Gardasil is dangerous. It is much simpler and infinitely more lucrative to just ignore the allegations and try to portray the victims as conspiratorial whiners. Instead, we get studies published in peer-reviewed journals such as, quote, "The Human Papillomavirus Immunization in Adolescents and Young Adults, a cohort study to illustrate what events might be mistaken for adverse reactions," end quote, from a lead author who received funding from Santa Fe Pasteur, which partners with Merck for vaccines outside the United States, and GlaxoSmithKline, makers of the human papillomavirus Cervarix, while the other two authors receive support from both Merck and GlaxoSmithKline. Sounds like objective science, right? No. Remember, Merck is the same company that intentionally kept the cardiac risks associated with Vioxx secret while aggressively advertising the product directly to consumers. The same company that so effectively fabricated a supposedly peer-reviewed journal to support Vioxx that even doctors couldn't tell it wasn't real. The Journal of Bone and Joint Medicine, Merck let 60,000 Americans die from Vioxx-related heart attacks before finally pulling the plug on the drug when they could no longer deny the truth. and cold-bloodedly set aside $1.6 billion with the intention of fighting every claim for damages. The CDC and the FDA maintain that Gardasil is an important cervical cancer preventive tool that could protect the health of millions of women. But the facts show that the opposite is true. In point of fact, Gardasil vaccination is not justified by the health benefits, nor is it even economically feasible. Nevertheless, the lure of huge profits appears to cloud the thinking of everyone in a position to say no to the promotion of Gardasil. It is up to us, the victims, the parents, and the concerned friends and neighbor, to get the message out to as many people as we can. We must flood our legislators with notice that this vaccine is dangerous, should not be given to anyone, and at the very least, should be not mandated for school attendance. I'm Gary Knoll. This entire article and all of its footnotes and references and citations are posted on GaryKnoll.com, my Facebook, and ProgressRadarNetwork.com. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to go to our guest, Kelly O'Meara, in a moment. She is a multi-award-winning investigative reporter who has worked with the Washington Times, Insight Magazine. She's written dozens of articles exposing the fraud of psychiatric diagnosis and the dangers of psychiatric drugs. For the past 2 years, she's been the primary journalist working on the story of mass killings in psychiatric meds. We're going to go to her in a moment. Just one quick mention. Tonight, we're having our celebration dance party for our audience. It'll be a lot of fun, 7 to 11. And if you want to join us, we have we called this morning. We got about a dozen people who had made reservations who are not coming. So if you want to come, call now. Make a reservation. It's free. It's going to be a lot of fun. Couples, singles, young, old, doesn't matter. We're going to be having a great time. I selected all the music. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Hope to see a lot of you who've been to our 50 other dance parties over the last 30 years. That'll be a lot of fun. But no questions. I'm there to sign books. Bring you any book you want to have signed. I'll be happy to do it. But no health questions. Tonight's about celebrating life. Now let's go over and say hello to Kelly O'Meara. Nice to have you with us, Kelly.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Doing good. Kelly, before we begin, I want to share with the audience more recent military statistics regarding mental disorders and the rates of violence among soldiers under the influence of psychiatric drugs. And then have you respond to it, please.
Okay.
Veteran suicide rate has jumped 44% between just 2 years, 2009-11, and rose an additional 16% between 2011 and 12. Today, an average of 22 veterans every 24 hours of the day kill themselves. Veterans comprise 10% of the U.S. population but account for 20% of all U.S. suicides. Conversely, 20% of the total 1.7 million men and women serving or have served in Iraq and Afghanistan have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Mental illness has been diagnosed in 42% of returning reservists and 20% of active duty personnel. And prescriptions for psychiatric drugs continue to double and triple, with some soldiers taking as many as 12 or more medications at a single time per day. Now, we now have another case of a mass shooting, this time at Fort Hood in Texas, where 34-year-old Army Specialist Ivan Lopez killed three military personnel and wounded another 16 before turning the gun on himself. What I find remarkable and so negligent is that the base's commandant, Lieutenant General Mark Miley, insisted that his underlying medical condition was not a precipitating factor in his shooting spree, and hence don't blame the medication. And this is what we've been told time and again. But we've also seen this in other cases with Army psychiatrist Major Nidal Hassan, and Obama simply labeled him a terrorist. So take us back, going from now backwards, and look at all of the more than 15,000 reports of psychiatric drugs associated with violent acts that relate to mania and aggression 31 school shootings resulting in 72 deaths and 162 wounded, where the killer has been confirmed to have been on either taking psychiatric drugs or was a phase of withdrawal of those drugs, yet there has been virtually no discussion of the drugs as being a part of this.
Yeah, it's, the cat is sort of out of the bag at this point. I think that with the recent shooting at Fort Hood with Ivan Lopez, I think what's interesting there is that the base commander actually came out almost immediately and gave out more information than we usually get, which is that he was suffering from mental illnesses, that he had been given Ambien and other medications for anxiety and depression. And I think that that was pretty telling that it was so quick that that information was provided. We don't always get that quick. However, within 24 hours of that announcement, the commander came out and said, oh, it wasn't because of his mental illnesses. In other words, it wasn't because of the drugs. It was because he had an argument. So, I mean, I saw that news report the following day, I thought, oh, gee, I wonder which pharmaceutical company made that phone call. Clearly, I believe, based on just the information that's been provided so far, Ivan Lopez is another example of one of our military personnel who was, quote-unquote, treated with psychiatric drugs, a cocktail of psychiatric drugs. And, in fact, that is what is becoming the norm. It's not just, oh, here's an antidepressant, but here's an antidepressant, an antipsychotic, a full cocktail of mind-altering drugs. So, I think that by letting that information out first gave us a pretty good clue about what was going on with Ivan Lopez.
Tell us about the history of violence on almost the Columbine, all these major shootings. They've all been on psych drugs. The media chooses not to ask the question. They look at the guns. They don't look at the drugs.
Right. And again, I mean, look, you're up against a pharmaceutical industry that has big bucks, okay? And I understand that. At this point, we have to look to lawmakers who they have to investigate the connection between psychiatric drugs and these mass shootings / suicide rate in the military, which is at epidemic levels. I mean, when you have more military personnel dying by suicide than combat, clearly there's a problem. I don't see the military doing much in the way of trying to get to the bottom of it, because frankly, I think they already know what the problem is. They put out a report not too long ago. It was a 2010 report where they did this massive study. They questioned 150,000 military personnel about their mental health, but never once did they ask what psychiatric drugs they had been taking. I mean, that's very telling. You ask 150,000 military personnel about their mental health, but you don't ask about the drugs that they're taking. These are mind-altering drugs. They are dangerous drugs. The Food and Drug Administration has black box warnings on them. This is the most serious warning the FDA can place on a drug. And yet, nobody wants to look at that. We know that these drugs can cause suicidality, homicidality, psychosis, mania, hallucinations. I mean, you just go down the list. These are horrific side effects of these drugs. And we know that 4% of the people who take them will experience these adverse side effects. So the question isn't anymore, how come nobody knows this? Everybody's pretty tuned in, I think. I think that the cat is out of the bag. We all know this is a major player in why people are going off. Now, the good news, Gary, is that we have a member of Congress who appears to be ready to hold some hearings on this, and that's Jeff Miller, the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee on the Hill. Remember, he came out early on after the shooting at the Washington Navy Yard with Aaron Alexis, and he came on the radio on WTOP in Washington and actually brought up the fact that he was on an antidepressant that can cause this kind of behavior. So anyway, he told me last week that they're planning on holding hearings in June about this. So, that's a step in the right direction. It's a start.
Well, that's a good start, and I appreciate all the good work that you're doing, Kelly. We have a lot of files. We've done a lot of research. I've written several articles, and I know a lot of veterans, including Dr. Doug Rocky and others, who are willing to come forward and testify about behavior once on the meds, suicidal tendencies, aggressive tendencies, even when they come home and are told that you must take these meds and then end up having outbursts of anger, the child abuse among vets at home when they return with post-traumatic stress disorder is sky high. I interviewed them down in Florida. I interviewed hundreds of vets in the woods down there who have been came home, were put on meds, were violent, and were thrown out of their jobs. So now their homes ended up in the woods, homeless, and now are trying to get off those drugs, and no one's listening to their story. But we have that story. I'll send you a copy today of American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed and let you know that when those hearings come, put me down to, I've testified many times, put me down to testify as an expert witness in this field because we have the research, and I have at least 10 other people I know who could testify, plus the people you know, so this legislator would know he would have some good science and good people behind him. Thank you very much for being with us today. And if people want to reach out to you, give us your website, please.
I don't have a website, Gary.
Okay, well, what we'll do is this. When you get close, Kelly, to the date, let me know. I'll have you back on the show, and we'll see what we can do to get the entire audience from around the United States aware of these hearings so they can be supported. All the best. Kelly O'Meara, O-M-E-A-R-A. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you for listening. Have a nice day.